Hey, Mujeta, good to see you and thank you for joining the We Don't Play podcast show. How are you?
I'm well. It's good to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Anytime, anytime. You know, people have tapped already into this episode because they saw everything that deals with sex relationships and they're like, okay, what else do we have on the table? Because I usually splurge them like every maybe 3 months. So they're like, okay, another one, another one. So I don't know what's gonna happen from this one, but they're definitely going to enjoy this because I know you have been bringing a lot of insight, especially on your own podcast, Say It to Me Nice podcast. You know, they should definitely go check it out because, yeah, you bring all the gems in there. So we're bringing to the show just a little segment so you can, you know, give us a little spice and let us know more about what they need to know when it comes to relationships, orgasms, and of course, sex.
My favorite topic.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Put a little razzle dazzle on it.
Exactly. So tell us more about you. You know, who is Brigetta? You know, how did you get started in all this? And what was your first experience like since we're going in there?
Ooh, I love it. I love it. Okay. Well, like you say, I'm Bridgetta Giles. I am host of Say It to Me Nice podcast. I am a sexuality coach, a sexuality counselor. Yes, those are two different things. I'm also a behavioral health trainer where I train clinicians on different models and how to implement them properly with their clients. I have a master's in clinical psychology. I am now completing my final classes in a master's in human services counseling. And after that, I will be getting my PhD in clinical sexology. That is really me. My first experience, my sexual debut, if you will. So my background is I was raised by my grandparents in a very small rural town in Louisiana called Tallulah. Yes, Tallulah, Louisiana, very rural. And my grandparents weren't the traditional grandparents. We they had very some traditional ideologies. I was very sheltered, but my grandparents were very vocal and open with me about conversations around sex. So at I think I was around 11 years old, my grandmother brought home and just put on the kitchen table all these different methods of protection. There's a diaphragm, there's some condoms, there's some birth control pills, there's a patch. She had some stuff she had printed out about the depot shot and just wanted to educate me on sex. Now, was it a fully sex positive conversation? No. It relied heavily on, protection, prevention of STIs and pregnancy. So it wasn't really a lot of conversation around pleasure. That conversation came much later on in my life. But that conversation when I was 11 really shaped my mindset around sex and what it was like physically. So as I grew and my classmates were becoming sexually active in high school and and honestly junior high, I really didn't have an interest in it. Like it was the thrill of it wasn't there for me because I understand the mechanics of it. And so when I think I was around 11th or 12th grade, and this is real rural, we had these assemblies where they would get all the girls in the auditorium and all the boys would go into the gym and a nurse would come in and talk to us about sex. And again, the conversations were about preventing STIs and preventing pregnancy. But I'll never forget the nurse, this is a medical professional, an RN, put a condom over her hand, like her fist. She balled her fist up and like, look, if a guy tells you that they're too big for a condom, that's a lie. I was with it. I was with that understanding. I had gotten that same understanding from my grandparents. So I'm like, okay, yeah, good conversation. But then she said, condoms cannot break. No, that's inaccurate. And so she was just talking like condoms can't break. So you really shouldn't even be having condoms can't break. So if they say the condom broke and they stop, like she went into this whole spiel about how condoms cannot break. And then it kind of segued into you shouldn't really be having sex anyway, but if you do, and he said a condom broke, that's a lie. And I'm like, no, that's not accurate. Now, remember, I was not sexually active at the time. So my friends around me who were really looking at me like, how would you know? You're not having sex. So how would you know? And so I found myself having to do research. Now, again, this is back 2002-ish, 2001 to 2003, somewhere in there. And so we have the wealth of the interwebs in its fullness as we do right now. But I was able to print out some stuff and I was able to do a little research. And with the limited amount of research that we had back then, I was able to convince my peers, like, yo, I know she's an adult and I know she's a medical professional, but she just flat out lied to us because condoms can break. And so if he said the condom broke, the condom broke. You probably need to stop to get another condom. And that segued into conversations around, well, you don't need to wear oil-based lubes with condoms. And it just kind of built upon that. And so that inspired me when I was a senior to really start looking at what it would take for me to do that professionally. I've always been a very creative person. I wanted to be a writer. I'm working on a book right now. I still have that love in me. So I was going to go to school to become a screen playwright. My mother said no, real quick, like, you're not gonna make no money doing that. So I was like, well, I really enjoy talking about sex and I really enjoy helping people understand sex. And my mother was like, no, my child is not gonna be out here talking about sex. So that came down to, okay, I'm gonna become a LMFT, a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I'm going to help couples with sexual issues. And that was the compromise. But as I did my research and just knowing who I am, I didn't want to diagnose. I didn't want to go through the licensure, that particular licensure process in Louisiana. And so I looked into, well, what are the other options? And that's when I became a sexuality educator first. And that was in 2008. I was a certified family life educator with a specialization in human sexuality. And so for about the first 5 years, it was just education, just putting education out there specifically for couples. Then it expanded once I learned more about the orgasm gap. Orgasm gap, basically, there are 80%, about 80% of women who have never, ever had an orgasm, or 80% of women who have sex with men, they're not having orgasms in comparison to other demographics and other love styles and other orientations. So looking at that data, I'm like, you know what? I need to be educating women. And for me, I need to educate BIPOC Black women because of the intersectionality between race and sexuality and the stigmatization around women's pleasure. But when you looking at Black women's pleasure, all of that, I'm like, I want to talk to the Blacks. I want this to be focused on enriching Black relationships and Black women's relationships with sex. So that is my very long story of how I got here today.
No, that's
my practice started in 2014, my private practice. Mm-hmm.
That's really amazing. You know, you said 2014, and I'm looking at it now, we're in 2022. You know, 2023, people are trying to still get over the whole pandemic, especially during the pandemic. I know a lot of people were having sex, you know, that led into pandemic babies, as they call them. Ooh. But they either didn't plan for them or they didn't know what to do about them. So just looking at the gap, like you've talked about, what do you think would be the number one solution for solving this orgasm gap?
Oh, that's a very good, very good question. So I come from the ideology that sexual communication is a vital part of sexual satisfaction. And so I feel as though with the communication piece, being able to communicate your thoughts and feelings around sex or your value system around sex, being able to communicate what pleasures you, what does not pleasure you, what your experience have been like thus far, is very key to sexual satisfaction and sexual understanding, but there is a responsibility piece that comes before being able to communicate it, and that is that sexual self-exploration, or a little sexploration, if you will, being able to go inward to determine, or and oftentimes redefine, what sex and what pleasure means to you. So I think if I had to pick out of the two things, having that level of sexual self-awareness before you're able to communicate it. That's what I think a key to kind of closing that orgasm gap is, really truly understanding your own relationship with sex and being able to heal that and redefine some things for yourself.
That's a great point. Thank you for bringing that up, because as you were mentioning this, what came to my mind was, you know, as you said, how your experience was when you started. Everyone has a different debut or sexual debut, right? So some may get it in a traumatic way, some may get it in a pleasing way, some may get it without even realizing what is happening, you know, for them to unlearn what they learned, quote unquote, and relearn something that they can be able to enhance takes time. Mm-hmm. And some people, it also boils down to love language, because some people may not even like being touched. Some people hate that. So how does it get to that point where, like, okay, I just want to have sex, but I don't want to orgasm, or maybe the guy doesn't even know how to get to that point, because maybe he wasn't trained well, or he didn't know what to do in his experiences. So it's caused a lot of gaps in between his relationships, which has led into a lot of disorder. So how does someone get out of that whirlwind?
Everything, I'm gonna tell you, you're gonna get tired of me today saying this, but everything goes back to communication. I'm telling you, everything goes back to communication. And with that, when we're looking at, and again, the things that I do is for the pleasure of Black folks. So when you're looking at Black sexuality in and of itself, and we weren't given, be it by the outside world, be it by our families, we weren't given the education about pleasure. We weren't given that. So there are a lot of ups and ups, a lot of, oh, this happened, this is a thing, oh, we're here now. Mm-hmm. There's not mindfulness in those moments. But I think recognizing that what we were given when we first started having sexual experiences versus where it is that we want to go or having sexual goals, there's going to be some muddiness between where we used to be and where we want to be. And acknowledging that and leaning into that and seeking support in that and communicating. Listen, I know we've done this before, but I'm hearing about all these different types of orgasms. I'm hearing about these experiences that people are having out in the world, that people, sex therapists, educators, counselors, coaches, intimacy interventionists, we're all in the world talking about, that I've never experienced. So how can we form a plan as a couple? How do we form a plan to improve our sex? I will always tell anybody, if you want to redefine sex, start with going to a sexuality professional. Just if the resource is there, if you have access, and we're everywhere for the most part, find one that will help you craft out some goals and help you attain those goals. If you don't want to go that far out, just having a conversation with your partner about sexual values that are like helping you or benefiting the relationships, and the mindsets and values that are not helping or benefiting the relationships, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And I love that you said communication is where it really starts and finishes before it starts anything else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you were mentioning this too, one thing came to my mind, because I've been hearing this a lot, that couples who are married don't have as much sex as couples who are not married. And that's that could be a false statement, that could be subjective, but there's some truth between that. So what are you thinking about that kind of
thing? So the research on that is clear that seems to be the case, that married people are having less sex. But what they're not looking at is everything that comes within not only marriages, but other forms of committed relationships. Whereas we're looking at other stressors that impact the frequency and duration and quality of the sex that they're having. Typically, when people are getting are married or in these committed relationships, they're looking at figuring out ways to pay the mortgage. They're looking at most of the time, two income households that are both tired at the end of the day and have not reserved enough energy to pour into that sexual part of their relationship. People honestly are getting to a place in their relationship where they're wanting to really focus on other types of intimacy, not just the sexual intimacy. And sometimes, I this is a part of the conversation that I was having this morning. Sometimes when we're looking at women and they're not satisfied they've been receiving in these committed relationships, it becomes obligatory. Like I'm obliged, like I am obligated to have sex with this person, even if I don't really want to, because of how I view my views on marriage or my mindset around marriage or some religious based marriages. Anyone who knows anything about anyone, when something is an obligation, it takes the fun out of it. If I feel as though I can't say no because I have to do this, there, in and of itself, I'm approaching this not fully invested because I don't necessarily want to do this. I have to do this, but right. I don't like it. So when you're looking at that and how that mindset impacts desire, impacts arousal, your body's not going to respond if you're not fully enthusiastically involved in this situation. So those are some reasons why the stats tell us that more committed people or more married people are having less sex. There's a lot of other factors other than the sex that play into or impacts the sex.
That's big.
I'm a talker. I forgot to tell you, I'm a talker.
No, I love
real long wind.
No, it's good because people get to hear your thoughts and that also helps them think about what they're already processing before listening to you, because that's really where the conversation starts on what can I do to change where I'm at? And if I can't change it, how can I get that solved? And sometimes people just say, you know what, I'm out. And that can lead to a lot of other things because it's like, oh, you're not satisfying me here. It could be finances. It could be domestic violence, verbal abuse. It goes a long way into so many things and roles and plays. So I think that's also something a lot of people should think about. And I know some couples, like I was talking about this interview that I had with Susan Bratton, and she was talking about how she's, you know, if you guys listen to the podcast, you definitely know about this story, but she's 62. She has her husband, but they have partners and they, you know, go to the swingers. They have their lifestyle. They do what they want. They are very, you know, respectable, respectful, and also very mature about the things that they do. Some couples can't handle that. Some couples are like, hey, I'm selfish. Hey, I can't do this. You know, some people are like, okay, let's see what happens. Some people try it and then it ends up being the third person wants to join the marriage, or, you know, it just gets messy. So
yeah.
Well, how does someone focus on the now and not focusing on the surroundings without, you know, disrupting the flow, if that makes sense?
So I think what you're talking about is mindfulness. And with that, mindfulness is being able to concentrate on what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because for clarity, are you saying that if someone is interested in consensual non-monogamy or opening up their relationship, like how do we get them to just focus on now instead of the fear of what could happen? Is that what you're asking? Right. Or I want to be clear. Okay. So with consensual non-monogamy, I will say they're mostly that. And number one has to be your personal value system around relationships, right? If you are a person that to the core of you are monogamous, you value every single thing about monogamy, whatever it is, like whether or not you want to call it selfish or you know, you can't concentrate on more than one person. I'm that person. I know for a fact that once I am invested or I like a person, that I have tunnel vision. Like that is it. My heart is not big enough to love multiple people at one time. That's just me. And that's not something that I want to change about me. So I think first, before entering into a consensually non-monogamous relationship, you got to make sure that this is something that you have a value system in consenting to, right? This is not about, I want to do this for my person because my person wants it. This is a, is this something that I am willing to consent to, right? Not about, you know, the possibilities or anything, but as I am right now, is this something that I found a value system in consent to, and communicate that to your person? Number one. If you're like, you know what, I can get down, I could, you know, play a little bit, I'm okay with that. Cool. If you know that you can, and you have a value system in being able to share sexual or intimate experiences with other people, with your person, then start having a conversation about what that looks like for the health of your relationship, right? So if your relationship is already real shaky, there's infidelity, there's trust issues, there's financial issues, there are many things that's going on, you gotta clean up your house first. You gotta make sure your relationship is solid before you start any other type of relationship, because ultimately, even if it's a swinging situation, ultimately, if it's, you know, you want a unicorn, y'all want to, you know, have someone to play with, it's still a form of a relationship. And if your base relationship ain't quite working out, you don't want to try to pull another one into it. That's no, that's too much to concentrate on, right? So as far as being mindful of that, that's part of being mindful. What are we presently experiencing? What's presently happening with us? And do we have a good handle on that first? Amazing. That's it. Amazing. That is how I would start with that.
Thank you for that. That really clears the air for a lot of people, because I think a lot of people are going to think about communication being the takeaway or the key takeaway in this. And I know I'm definitely going to bring you back for part two, because I wanted to do a trivia, quick fire question with you. So it's going to be a quick, maybe 3 to 5 questions. And then the next time you come, I know we're going to talk about what the first part of this conversation was and how it affected a lot of people. And definitely, I would love to hear their feedback when this happens. So are you down?
Love that. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, so let's
do it. I love it. This is literally my favorite topic. I could talk about sex, intimacy, how sex impacts relationships, how intimacy. I could talk about this all day. I love it.
Hey. So I'll ask. Okay, so early morning or late night?
Ooh, early morning. Early morning, because you have the highest level of testosterone in the morning time. For women, progesterone is at its peak. That everything is higher, heightened in the morning time. Yes.
Okay.
And I'm a morning person, so it helps too, because I'm also a morning person. I'm always up at like 5, super duper hype. So yeah.
Okay. Nice. Okay. That was a good one. Next one: length or girth?
Ooh. Preference of the person. Some people like girthy. Some people like lengthy. I am like girthy mid, like mid length, but with some girthiness. Like that's my, like, I don't like really, really long. That's too much. I can't handle it. I don't know. Pineapples. But I think it's also, it's just personal preference of the person. Yeah. Do you cuss on you? I have not. You're not a cursor, are you?
Go ahead.
I feel like you're like, really, you are a cursor. Good. Thank you. So all pussies are different. All pussies are different. All vaginas, vaginal canals are different. Everyone likes a different thing. So talk to your person. But for me in my house, mid-length, nice girthiness. Yes.
Okay. Top 3 best positions.
Again, preference. You ask your partner, but for me in my house, I prefer. I know someone's probably like, "That's it." I love missionary. I am a missionary girl. I do. I love the intimacy of missionary. I love the view of missionary. I am a looker. I like to look at my person. I like for my person to look at me. For me, that is a part of the intimacy that fills my cup. So for me, missionary would be number one. I like reverse cowgirl. For me, is the most pleasurable because I have control over clitoral stimulation in that position. And again, I feel like it allows me, because I'm a little hefty. I'm a hefty gal, you know. It allows me more control of my body weight in a way that traditional cowgirl doesn't. I feel like I'm gonna crush someone's chest muscle sometime, and then I get in my head. Yes. And I would say from the back, just because for me that's most pleasurable. But again, if there is no one size fits all, if you're listening and you want to know your person's favorite positions, ask them what feels most pleasurable to them.
That's a good one. And last one, I'm going to ask, toys or no toys?
Toys, always. That's a definite immediate yes. Listen, so immediate yes. So I know this sounds really cliche, but toys are your teammates, not your competition. That anything that enhances the pleasure that is to be experienced in those moments is good. Anything that is introduced that heightens what's happening in the moment is good. It does not mean that your sex isn't good enough. It does not mean what you're doing is not good enough. It is an elevated level of pleasure. And if I'm going to speak to the ladies or people with vaginas, okay, and clitorises, you need to only fuck people who have an invested interest in your pleasure. If this person cares little about whether or not this moment is pleasurable for you, that means you don't need to be having sex with that person. Take that what you will. I don't care your relationship status. I don't care the length of how long y'all been together. This, you both have to be invested in your own pleasure as well as the pleasure of your partner. That's just the responsible thing. That's being sexually responsible. So, yes to toys.
I love that. Awesome. Wow. I'm definitely bringing you back for part two. This has been so insightful. You really brought a lot of knowledge to it. And because you've also gone through the educational process, you know, you're about to get your PhD in this too, you know, people, they won't be like, oh yeah, she's just talking sex because of sex. Yeah, but you actually are giving people some
I got a little education behind my name. I got a couple of letters, you know, a few letters back there, you right. know, and I take this seriously. And I, just to add, I know we're gonna close up, but I want to add, do not be afraid to seek out support from professionals in this field. A lot of people think, well, if this is something that's happening in my relationship or I'm having some type of sexual dysfunction, I need to go to a therapist. Here's the truth of the matter. Most counseling programs do not prepare clinicians to support couples or individuals in sex. They do not. They do not support. You may take one human sexuality class and that's it. You need to ask your clinician or coach or counselor or educator or whatever interventionist you're seeking, what is their sexual education? What continued courses did they take? What continued education courses have they taken? What makes them educated enough to be able to support you and your partner or you just as yourself in sexual matters? I don't think people know that because a lot of people don't even know what a sex therapist versus a sex counselor versus an educator is. So just being able to interview your medical professionals, because that is, sex therapists are mental health professionals. Interview them. So I just wanted to add that. Make sure the people are credentialed in some way, shape, form, or fashion. Like, what is their experience in this work?
Exactly. That was so helpful. Thank you so much, Bridgetta, for being here, being on the show. You know, thank you so much for, you know, pouring all these gems. A lot of people are definitely going to take this home and run with it and also take notes. You know, I'm sure they're probably going to figure out, okay, how can I get in contact with you if they want to, you know, connect with you or email you or, you know, just book with you. What are the options that are available?
So I will say I give a lot of free stuff on my TikTok and my Instagram. I will tell you before, listen, if you don't like cussing, if you don't like cussing and countryness, I'm probably not the counselor for you. But you can follow me on TikTok and on IG at Say It To Me Nice Podcast. You can listen to my podcast where I do give a lot of good sex education, anything dealing with sex, intimacy, how sex and intimacy impact relationships. Like, I'm talking about all of that with a whole bunch of cuss words in there. But you can also work with me. I am accepting clients right now. You can follow me on my website is bgilescoaching.com, bgiles, G-I-L-E-S, coaching.com. And you can book a session with me. I do individual sessions and couple sessions, and I am presently working on a group for women who want to redefine what pleasure means and figure out ways to communicate that when needed. So beautiful. That's how you can find me.
Thank you
so much. Or you can also find me on Clubhouse, which is where we met via the Clubhouse at Say It To Me Nice. I do participate in conversations around podcasting as well as pleasure conversations. So, yeah.
Amazing. Shout out to Clubhouse, because if Clubhouse wasn't there, this podcast would not be existing. So definitely, I appreciate that. And let's stay connected. And you guys, make sure you rewind.
Absolutely.
Check the description and, you know, tap in so you can get all this information you need on the speed dial. So thank you so much, Bridgetta. I'm bringing you back here definitely for part two in the next season. So with that said, I appreciate you and I look forward to speaking with you again.
Thank you so much. Peace to everybody.